I'm Dorothy Rossing, and this is a session on food facts and fallacies. I should tell you a little bit about myself. My undergraduate degree is in food technology, which is the chemistry and bacteriology of foods. And then just last year, I finished my master's degree in nutrition from Northern Illinois University. And I taught there for a semester, and I'm now working for a government grant whereby Congress appropriated 50 cents per school child to each state to do some teaching of nutrition to school children. So I go out and do workshops for school teachers in a 10-county area in Illinois and help them to learn nutrition themselves and also give them ideas on how they might teach their children in their classes all the way from child, from preschool all the way up to 12. And also I work with school food service people, helping them to cook the food so that you don't lose all the nutrients before you put it on the trays, and helping them with management skills and these kinds of things. So I do this on a part-time basis all through the year, and we'll be doing it for at least another year since the government grant goes for one more year. I was looking in the library and also in the bookstore about what references there are here for foods, and they're really very good. I would suggest that if any of you would want a really good book on general nutrition and some of the questions that you've been wondering about, get this one by Jean Maier, who was a professor of nutrition at Harvard and is now president of Tufts University. He's well respected in the field, and it is in the bookstore here, and is really a very, very good book without any of the extremist positions that are so often taken by health food addicts and people who want to push one particular phase of nutrition to the exclusion of others. So this is a very good book, and he is a well-renowned nutritionist. This book is also in the bookstore. I haven't looked through this a lot, so I can't tell you too much about this. From what I saw, I had some questions, and other parts of it were good, so I haven't read this through completely, but it's I would say that in general it's probably pretty good. Also, there are other books over there, More with Less Cookbook, Diet for a Small Planet, Recipes for a Small Planet, Laurel's Kitchen, which is a book about vegetarian cooking, and it's a very interesting book to read in that there's a lot of philosophy mixed in with the recipes, and it teaches you something about vegetarian cooking. And this was the textbook that for a workshop that I had at the university on vegetarian cooking, so I know it is a very good book. Another book that is over there that is something like it is the Mennonite cookbook called More with Less Cookbook. And that, too, is an excellent one in that it includes the philosophy of eating with less, trying to make more simple foods, the kind of philosophy that Holden tries to inspire, that we can eat just ordinary foods without desserts, and they can be very healthful, and then once in a while you'll celebrate and have desserts or something a little different. So that it's a good book, one of the cookbooks that has a lot of philosophy and information just kind of sprinkled through the chapters. So it's really an excellent one to get, and I recommend it highly. As far as other things that the library has a number of books in there, and they're in the 641 section down on the shelf very close to the floor, so just kind of sit down on the floor and look through the books if you're interested in finding some resources on food. And then I have with me a few books that I brought, one on nutrition labeling and one that's put out by the American Dietetic Association, Food Facts Talk Back, that's very excellent. You can order this for a dollar, but you might want to look at it. So I have some of them up here, and afterwards you may want to come up and look at them. One other source of nutrition information is from the titles that you can get from the Consumer Information Bureau in Pueblo, Colorado. I have their winter catalog with me, and they have, I suppose, 30 brochures of one kind or another that you can get free by just sending in. You can send for 20 things at a time, and one copy of them is all free. And so if you want to make out an order and then have it sent to your home, it'll be there when you get back. You can certainly do it that way. You can also go and see your cooperative extension people, and most of them will have available this book. If you send for it from the superintendent of documents, it costs you $1. As I understand it, most of the cooperative extension places will give it to you free. And if you're interested in the nutritive value of foods, it gives you all of the, tells you what minerals and what the caloric content is of a number of foods. It also gives the recommended dietary allowances and this kind of thing. So it's a basic book. If you're interested at all in that kind of thing, it's the reference book in a rather small form, but has most of the things that you might be interested in as far as information. Okay, now just to get us started thinking along the line of and get your ideas as to what kinds of questions you had in mind about nutrition, I'm going to pass out a little quiz as something different here. And this is a true false. The first question, honey has fewer calories than table sugar. Cup for cup is false. Honey has been promoted highly by the health food people, and it really has no more good qualities for it than sugar. Sugar has 770 calories per cup. Honey has 1,040. And also, now if you like the taste of honey, fine. There's nothing wrong with going ahead and switching to honey, but it is not any more healthful for you than sugar. It is much more expensive. If you consider that honey costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.29 a pound, whereas sugar now costs something like 30 to 35 cents. It's been going up rapidly in the last few weeks. But something like that. It is a much more expensive way to get your sugar and sweeteners. The few trace nutrients, minerals that are there are in such trace quantities that they do not provide any of your, very much of a part of your need for minerals. So that don't feel that switching to honey is in any way more helpful. In fact, I am really against thinking that your mindset that you want to get nutrients from your sweeteners. Sweeteners are such that that most of us should be cutting down on sweeteners, so you should not be going to honey because you think, well, then I'll get some nutrients besides. Just try to cut down on sugar. It has been shown to cause dental caries. Certainly all of us have known that for a long, long time. And the time that you eat sugar or a sweetener of some kind and the form in which you eat it makes a difference as to how cariogenic it is. In other words, honey eaten on a slice of bread for a mid-morning snack would probably be one of the greatest cariogenic things that you could eat, in that the honey is very sticky and will stay on your teeth unless you brush your teeth after every mid-morning snack, but presumably most people do. Now if you have honey with a breakfast cereal, or if you have pre-sweetened or if you put sugar on your cereal, that kind of thing, it will kind of dissolve in with the milk, that kind of thing. So if you eat sweeteners with a meal, they are less cariogenic than if you eat them in the middle of the morning or afternoon, much as eating a candy bar, a sticky candy bar. It stays on your teeth and then the bacteria can grow. They use this sugar for their food. The bacteria grow and produce acids which attack the enamel in your teeth. So that it's much better if you're going to have sweeteners in your diet to have them along with the meal. That will help. Yeah.
The reason I use honey instead of sugar is in my baking, and I use only half as much sugar or honey as it calls for in the recipe. So I figure I'm getting.
So you're cutting down on the sweetening.
It's just as sweet. In fact, you know, if it calls for a cup of sugar, I use even less than a cup of honey. So I think.
Yeah. Well, in most recipes, you can cut the sugar down to almost half.
without a noticeable difference in the texture, or for cookies, for instance, especially. If you want to cut down on sugar, I would advise all of you to try to, if it calls for a cup, I almost always put in 3/4 of a cup or something like that. And the same way, and you can do it with sugar or honey. Honey is slightly sweeter than sugar, in that it honey is made from it is the sucrose molecule that is split into, and it makes one molecule of glucose and one molecule of fructose. The honeybee has already done this for you in his stomach, and so you don't have to worry about digesting it. And since fructose is the sweetest of all the sugars, anytime that you have fructose, you will have something that is sweeter than either sucrose or glucose. And so it is sweeter in that sense.
And it's more easily digestible. It goes right into your bloodstream. It doesn't have to be broken down by sugar.
Well, that's an instantaneous process, so I don't think you should worry about that at all. It just, in the brush border, before it is absorbed, it is just broken down into fructose and glucose, and they are both absorbed very rapidly. It's an instantaneous thing. Even as much starch is broken down to glucose and absorbed as glucose, so that that is not a necessary thing. If you want instant energy, you don't have to go to honey instead of sugar. Yeah.
Would you speak a little bit more about sweeteners instead of sugar and or honey? The Select Committee on Nutrition said that the first step we would take is to cut down by 60% our intake of sugar in our diet.
Definitely.
Holden maybe isn't 60%, but we have cut the amount of desserts and what have you. We've even questioned whether or not we should have honey or sugar on the table, or whether you should have to walk to the buffet. Is that now legislating people's nutrition or what have you? Would you speak to the health issue, and whether or not Holden ought to be bolder in talking about sugar blues or
No, I would say they're doing just fine. And I think the idea is that to show people for some length of time, whether people are here for a week or for a month, that they really can get by and enjoy their meals without a dessert. I think the Senate dietary goals were that we cut down on sugar, just because there is probably more dental caries rampant in the United States than needs to be. Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology studied the whole role of sucrose and in the American diet, and I have a number of these copies, so if anybody wants one later, I'll just read you the very ending. Reasonable evidence exists that sucrose is a contributor to the formation of dental caries when used at the levels that are now current and in the manner now practiced. And second, other than the contribution made to dental caries, there is no clear evidence in the available information on sucrose that demonstrates a hazard to the public when used at the levels that are now current and in the manner now practiced. However, it is not possible to determine without additional data whether an increase in sugar consumption that would result if there were a significant increase in the total use of sucrose, corn sugar, corn syrup would constitute a dietary hazard. This was made in 76, and the use of sugars has not increased particularly since then. People have brought out that perhaps sugar is contributing to the incidence of diabetes. Studies have shown that is not the case. Sugar and diabetes are related in that diabetes is the disease that whereby you cannot, your body does not produce enough insulin to be able to take sugar in a concentrated form, so that the people who have diabetes have to watch their diet very closely. Other people have tried to show that it has something to do with the incidence of heart disease or hypertension, and this also has not been proven. Even the incidence of hyperactivity, which is a large area of concern, particularly amongst teachers and parents of young children, this has not been proven. And the Feingold, Dr. Feingold, who thought that besides sugar, he could see a problem with all kinds of additives in the diets of children, and that this caused them to be hyperactive also. Has not been proven. They have done a double-blind study at the University of Wisconsin and found that much of the change in behavior was in the eye of the beholder. And all that parents, if they knew that they were changing the diet of their children, that they could then see a change in their behavior. But under a double-blind study, it was not shown to be a factor in their activity. That when neither the people who were preparing the diets nor the people who were observing the children knew whether they were on a diet that included a number of additives and different amounts of sugar, they could not see any difference in their degree of hyperactivity. And I think that even the idea of hyperactivity may indeed be a possibility in some children, but here again, what one person would term hyperactive, someone else would just call a very active child, but very normal. And so this tends to be one of the questionable things. In a home diet where someone feels that they want to take all the sugar out of their child's diet, and feels that if the child somehow goes to a neighbor's house and has a cookie and they can see the difference, it might well be in any one child. But it is not the kind of thing that we as nutritionists can say for an overall population that this would be necessary to, or that this is a cause of hyperactivity at all. For any one particular person, their own metabolism may be different than what we would say for some kind of a general population study. If any of you want to do more on that, I have here a scientific status summary put out in 1976 on diet and hyperactivity, any connection, and you're welcome to look at this.
There was also an article in this winter's Journal of Pediatrics as a pediatrician, which reconfirmed just what you just said, another double-blind study done in Pittsburgh with nobody knowing what additives or sugars were being given, and again, they said the same thing, was mostly the eye of the beholder.
Right.
Is there any evidence that sugar is habit-forming?
No, sugar is not habit-forming.
Chemical dependency?
No, I don't think that's ever been shown. No.
This is as far as the physical.
Yes, right. You can develop a taste for it, just as some people develop a taste for high salt, but you can also decrease your taste for it. But there is no chemical dependency, right?
Yes. Yeah. You said there's not much difference then with sugar and honey. Is there any difference with the types of honey or the types of sugar?
No, the types of honey are just a different flavor depending on what kind of a flower they got the pollen from.
So brown sugar is sugar.
Yes.
How brown it is.
Yes, right. Well, and raw sugar is no better in that raw sugar is just has many impurities in it, and the Food and Drug Administration does not allow food in the food supply with a number of impurities in it, and so they do not allow raw sugar to be in the food supply.
I thought brown sugar was sugar with molasses added, which made it all the worse.
No.
As far as calories. No?
All the worse? Well, no, in that I guess I could look up how many calories a cup of brown sugar has, but I don't think it would be any different.
I mean, what is brown sugar?
Brown sugar is just not quite so highly refined, although some manufacturers would tend to add molasses to white sugar, too. So if they do not take out enough brown sugar before it is refined into the white. But either way, I would say don't go from one to the other if you like the taste. Don't go from one to the other because of any nutrients one way or the other. Yes.
What about the difference between raw honey and regular honey? Is it just flavor? Do you know how they use it in the stores out there?
I'm not too knowledgeable on raw honey.
I just heard that raw honey was better for you, but I don't exactly know why. I'm just curious.
Well, if they pasteurize the honey, doesn't that mean they heat it up? So if you heat something up, isn't there a tendency that you might destroy some of the nutrients?
Not of the minerals, no. You would destroy some of the enzymes that might be in there, but everything is in there in such trace quantities that in our diet it just is really very, very minimal. And I would just like you to think of getting your minerals and your vitamins from some other place than in your sweeteners. Well, maybe we better go on to the next. This also talks about sweeteners. The Food and Drug Administration must ban saccharin and nitrites from the food supply because they cause cancer. This is true under the Delaney Clause, which has been in effect since 1958, that any time something is shown to cause cancer in man or animals, the Food and Drug Administration must take it all out of the food supply. Now, a couple of years ago when it was shown in a study that saccharin caused cancer, then the Food and Drug Administration had to ban it. And of course you remember the big fuss about it. Everybody, we were taking out the last artificial sweetener. And so Congress passed a law exempting saccharin from the Delaney Clause and put a moratorium on the ban of it. It's kind of a double negative, but that's the way they did it. And that was in effect for 18 months, and by the end of 18 months they still hadn't figured out what to do. And so they passed an extension to that, and that will be up in another year. There may be something coming out of Congress before next May about what they're going to do with these kinds of things. They're trying to get a whole new way, new standards of looking at food additives. They will be able to have some risk and some benefit. In other words, saccharin has been shown to cause cancer, and that has been repeatedly shown in repeated studies, but at a very, very low level. So for some people who want to take that very low level of risk, people are feeling that they should still have it available if they want to. If they are willing to take that risk, as long as we inform them that the risk is there, much like you have now where the label is on the foods that contain saccharin on cigarettes, these kinds of things. And if you want to take that risk, fine. I will tell you it's a very low level, and unless you drink a lot of or eat a lot of foods with saccharin in it, it's probably just a minimal risk for you. But it does occur. And if you want to cut out all the risks that you can, I would suggest that you not eat things with saccharin in them, and particularly give it to youngsters. However, if you feel that the risk of obesity for you is higher than the risk of getting cancer from saccharin, then you know that's something for you to decide. Or if you are diabetic and feel that once in a while you'd like to have something sweet, then that's a possibility too. Nitrites also have been shown to cause cancer when they are changed at high heat to nitrosamines. Nitrites themselves are not a cancer-causing risk. But at high heats, like with when something is barbecued or fried, at high heats, then these can be changed. When they are combined with a protein of some kind, then they are changed to nitrosamines. Here again, the risk is low. Food processors found that the risk to the public would be higher danger of foodborne illness, particularly botulism, if they took the nitrites out of bacon, so that they are now gradually lowering it as they insert particularly sorbic acid and citric acid into the processing of bacon. And so that will be, you will see even now that the level of nitrites is down. I'm not sure that they will ever actually ban nitrites. You are finding some hot dogs and some bacon, I think, on the market that does not have nitrites in it. This you must be very cautious with, in that it is just like fresh meat. It is, does not have any kind of preserving action much that nitrites do, so that you have to be much more careful with it, use it up faster, that kind of thing. But I think the risk from nitrites in food such as this will become less and less. And in general, everything I read, it says that the nitrite scare was blown way out of proportion to the health problem. Yeah.
But when you would fry bacon, though, wouldn't that kill any chance of botulism? I mean, I don't
know. No, it doesn't, because botulism spores may grow, and the toxin would not be destroyed in the time that you would fry the bacon, I would say. The botulism toxin is not completely heat resistant, but I would not want to say that you would destroy all of the toxin that may be present, so that they really feel that is
what
too much of a problem.
Heating to a certain temperature would spores be killed from the toxin?
The toxin, 10 minutes. So that, I think that, seeing that how deadly botulism is, I would not want to take any risk as far as botulism is concerned, and I would certainly easily take the risk, much more easily take the risk of nitrosamines, because botulism is very, very, very deadly. Okay, we better get on. Whole milk contains about 8% butterfat. That is false. If you mark true, you are probably in the majority of Americans. Everyone seems to feel that that is about how much butterfat is in milk, and it is not. Whole milk is standardized at 3.5% butterfat. So that when you go to the grocery store and buy 2% or 1% milk, what that designates is the amount of butterfat in the milk. So if you're going from whole milk, which is 3.5% to 4% butterfat, and you cut back, you say, well, I want to cut back on the amount of fat I have, I'm going to go to 2% milk. There's hardly any difference in the flavor. I would urge you to do this. And you'll cut the amount of fat in the milk by half. Now, this doesn't mean that you're cutting down the calories quite by half, but because there are other things in the milk that produce calories, the carbohydrate, lactose, and the protein also give you calories, but at least you're cutting back in the amount of fat that you have. I would urge you then to gradually go to 1% and perhaps down to skim milk. Skim milk has an added little benefit that most of the time you can get in the skim milk that you buy at the grocery store, in that the fluid milk producers found that people really, when they first came out with skim milk, it was so bluish and the mouthfeel was very different, so that people didn't really like it until they, you know, got accustomed to it. So what they did was found that by adding non-fat dry milk solids to the skim milk, it became much more white. Gives you an added little dose of protein, so that in most cases, fluid skim milk that you buy in the grocery store is a very good bargain. It's the cheapest, it gives you the most protein, and the least fat. So gradually, if you can get down to that, that will be great. Certainly non-fat dry milk solids that you make make into fluid milk yourself are cheaper yet. And if you like this, it certainly gives you the same amount of nutrients that you get from fluid skim milk, so that if you want to cut down on the amount of money that you've spent on milk, that's certainly one way to do it.
What's the butterfat percentage in half and half?
Half and half is 10. Okay, this is my little diet up here that everybody's saying, is this what we're going to eat today? people are very interested in the kinds of fat content of different foods. And lard or shortening has 100%. Margarine or butter has only 80%. So in recipes where you're going, if you want to cut down on the fat a little, you can just go from having shortening to using butter or margarine. And you're cutting out some of the fat already.
Margarine is equal to butter, though.
Yes, margarine is standardized at 80% fat. It is the same content of fat as butter. Now, you are seeing in the grocery store some imitation margarines or bread spreads, this kind of thing. And they can't be called margarine because they aren't standardized at, they don't have 80% fat. So these are all the way from 40 to 60% fat. So it's a way for you to cut down your calories. Now, what the manufacturer has done then is add more water, because the rest of it is water or milk. Now, if you want the manufacturer to do that for you, fine. If you want to cut down on the amount of fat you have, you can just spread it thinner on your bread or your toast, and then you won't have to pay for that extra water. I would suggest that you do this rather than that, but, you know, whatever you want. Anyway, both of those, there's no difference in the calories. There is a difference in the saturated amount of saturated or polyunsaturated fats between those two. And that's the difference between butter and margarine. No difference in calories, no difference in amount of fat.